God is still on the throne, and prayer changes things.
Thank you, friends, for tuning in to your Watchman on the Wall broadcast of Southwest Radio Church. What we see out there is not good, and I'm sure you would agree. Just a few days ago, an unidentified suspect shot and killed a 60-year-old black Trump supporter in front of his Milwaukee, Wisconsin store. Burnell Trammell was a street preacher and frequently carried his Vote for Trump signs up and down the streets to encourage drivers to support the president and calling on the black community to endorse President Trump. Local police officials say Trammell was likely targeted because of his support for President Trump. Reggie Moore, director of the Milwaukee Office of Violence Prevention, told the local newspaper that he had intervened in a dispute between Trammell and a young man that he thought was related to a Trump sign that Trammell was carrying. Trammell's friends say he was ambushed because of his pro-Trump views. Here is more proof that the progressive left is not supportive of open dialogue or the free exchange of ideas. About a month ago, a young mother was shot in the head in Indiana because she said, "Blue lives also matter." Actually, all human lives matter, but be careful, though, for some that is not a subject of discussion. The mainstream media and the progressive left consider Agenda 21 and its dangers to life, liberty, and the well-being of our nation to be a conspiracy theory. Friends, it's not a theory. It's a very real monster that is threatening to change America in a way that would make the land of the free and the home of the brave completely unrecognizable. Agenda 21 is a blueprint for what many fear could easily morph into a totalitarian world government. The danger, friends, is very real. This is no joke. We need to be concerned about this. James Yeager is back with us. We're talking about his documentary, Unsustainable. James, thank you so much for your many video documentaries. We spoke about that in our previous program, and we're going to get into some really good stuff again. So thank you, James, for being with us.
Well, it's great to be back, Pastor Larry, and thank you for having me.
Well, let's talk about property rights and social equity. I think that's where we stopped in our previous interview. How does that impact us, and what does it mean?
Well, I think what Americans, many of them know, and what maybe needs to be emphasized is we have two main inalienable rights that were given to us by the deity that we must really, really pay attention to. The first one is property rights, and the second one is the right to keep and bear. Now, most people don't understand that if a person is denied property rights in that they're not able to build wealth through real estate ownership, they will be in poverty and their country will be in poverty. And the problem that occurs is that most of the United Nations signatory countries do not allow their citizens to register real estate with the county clerk. Since they cannot register real estate, they cannot borrow money on the equity in their private real estate property. If they cannot borrow money, they cannot use that money to fund businesses or startups. So therefore, they cannot build wealth. Therefore, they cannot hire people who are in poverty. It all starts with the chain of title of real estate. Real estate is the mechanism by which people build wealth. That's why the United States is the wealthiest nation in the world, because we allow our citizens to register and own private property. Now, you recall one of the 10 planks of communism is get rid of private property. So, in essence, the United Nations is promulgating a formula for worldwide poverty, because they want the people in the world to be in poverty so that they can rule and control them.
That's draconian, to say the least, because like you say, the right of ownership allows people to extract wealth from the property they own and land ownership is really a basic element of freedom and prosperity. And as you point out, that's why we are the richest nation in the world. This is the thing about this is we've always thought in America, you know, of the farmer owning property, the homeowner building equity, and everything that Agenda 21 stands for is against this. It's just like Karl Marx and Engels and everything that comes out of that vicious pit of evil, which we know is socialism or communism.
That's right. That's why the left and the socialists attack capitalism so much, because they know that if a country of people own real estate and can generate wealth, those people are going to be free. Because you cannot be free unless you're independent of the state. But they don't want that. They want everybody dependent on the state. Welfare, handouts, the state basically printing money and giving it out to people for, you know, universal basic income is the current thing that's being pushed. So freedom, a main attribute of freedom and prerequisite to freedom is you must be able to build wealth through property rights. It's not a matter of greed. We're not saying, oh, everybody's got to have a mansion or a house. We're simply saying that your government can't keep you, shouldn't keep you from owning real estate so that you can dig yourself out of poverty.
Yeah, it's very fundamental to our way of life, and yet it's so alien to so many, especially young people.
That's right. I mean, it's you know, people, Americans take it for granted that they can go out and file their real estate at the county clerk's office and, you know, build wealth, but the rest of the world. And this is where the Second Amendment comes in. If you have a government or a dictatorship or some kind of a country that won't let you own property rights, and you don't have the right to keep and bear arms to resist that, you're in trouble. We've got 153 nations in this world that are really in trouble, and the United States should not be following the United Nations Pied Piper and, by implication, condoning the activities of the basic principles behind the United Nations. We need to drop out of the United Nations.
Yeah, I think President Trump is right on. He's trying to restore a healthy nationalism. And, you know, I think this is probably at the root, or at least one of the evil roots, because of the fueling the hostility against him. He's really bucking heads with the globalists around us right here in America.
That's right. Trump is a nationalist. The globalists, the people behind the United Nations are globalists. This is a battle between globalists and nationalists. That's all it is. It's not a battle between the Republicans and the Democrats. The Democrats have basically been co-opted by the globalists and are being used as their puppets.
Well, I know the UN claims to be the only vehicle of producing peace in the world. So I want to ask you a question, and your film deals with it. Did the UN cut down on the number of wars? Did it produce world peace, or did it do something else?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, the United Nations has been looking for unifying principles for almost a century. And one of the principles they tried to use as a unifying principle was the reduction of war. And, you know, the First World War was supposed to be the war to end all wars. We had the League of Nations, which failed and then morphed into the United Nations. So, yes, the United Nations has been trying to use war as some kind of a unifying principle. But now we're at a point where we have war has become impractical. And the report from Iron Mountain goes into the history of war as a unifying principle.
I know there are some really tremendous statements about how the hydrogen bomb, you know, on your video, how the hydrogen bomb, because of its tremendous effects, made law as war as an organizing principle unrealistic because of the extent of the damage and the long-lasting effects of radiation poisoning the water and the atmosphere and so on. So what is now the big thing that is the unifying principle that's used like a big baseball bat against our nation?
Well, the number one unifying principle right now that the United States is, and the United Nations is using, after going through five or six unifying principles, poverty among those principles, is now called climate change. In other words, we're destroying the climate, so we all have to get together and pay a carbon tax so that the elites can fund the global government.
I know our common future, doesn't it speak about the environment? I mean, it says something like farmers are using 70% of the world's water. Auto emissions are degrading the environment. Allegedly by 2030, we're doomed. And all the emphasis is on scarcity, using fear-mongering to win a hearing. I think when people are afraid, like they've been made and cultivated to be afraid of COVID-19, they'll just about do anything to save their skin and to save their families.
Yes, we go through Malthus and the Club of Rome and the concept of scarcity. We also interviewed one of the top planetary physicists, climate physicists in the world, Willie Soon, and he explains why climate change is not the threat that the globalists and the left are trying to make it seem. He explains that climate change is not anthropomorphic. It is not caused by human industry. The sun is warming up the entire solar system. And he goes through this whole thing in detail and debunks climate change. Now, by saying this, I am not saying that environmentalism, prudent environmentalism and shepherding the resources of the world is not desirable. What I'm saying is that extreme environmentalism, whereby you falsify the facts in order to create the chaos to gain, you know, your thesis, antithesis, and synthesis of Hegelian dialectic, is really not ethical or moral.
Yes, and it seems that American people have become, you know, I'm thinking Patrick Henry, give me liberty or give me death. We seem to be at the point where we take liberty for granted. And there are so many other, quote, concerns that we have, like avoiding COVID-19 and avoiding global warming and the polluting of the air and so forth, so many other issues. But liberty is so basic and so fundamental to our religious rights, our religious freedom, to the property of ownership, to living the kind of life that God wants us to live. I mean, if one gets an atheist in the White House and the DNC back in August of 2019 said that their platform is basically atheistic, well, if we get somebody like Joe Biden in there, all of our liberties and our freedoms, which unfortunately are being taken for granted, will be taken away. And then, and it's too late, we will find out what happens when there's a loss of liberty.
That's right. And, you know, you're always seeing the Council on Foreign Relations and the power elite touting, especially in Foreign Affairs magazine, touting the concept of interconnected world, our interconnected world. Well, what people don't realize is our interconnected world, with all the interconnected jet flights, spread the COVID-19 disease all over the freaking planet in less than a week. That's what interconnectivity does. So what we need is, we need a world that is independent. We need strong, independent nations, not interconnected nations, where they can, you know, all the thousands of cargo crates coming into Los Angeles all every day are carrying, you know, all these moths and bugs and viruses, stuff coming into the country constantly. And so we've got, you know, this COVID is a function of globalization.
Yeah, it doesn't solve a problem, it creates a problem. And yet I'm thinking, even in agriculture, I've heard that in certain parts of the country there are new strains of disease against wheat, against rice. In fact, a lot of Americans have never seen these diseases, but they're common in other parts of the world. So once you open the border and just allow everybody to come in, who knows what they're bringing, disease that would affect us as humans, and also the food chain.
That's right, and we go into the concept of regionalization in this movie. We explain how they are moving us trying to move us from a national economy and country to regionalize us and then into a globalization. It's really, really tricky and nefarious, the machinations that are going on that the average American is not aware of in their local townships, right in their local townships. Your local township is actually subject to ICLEI rules and regulations, and they're just going right along with this. Americans really need to pay attention to this.
Yeah, we think if, you know, we have a 401k or whatever it is, or, you know, bank account, that we're okay. We turn the light switch on, the lights turn on, and we think we're okay. But we are, I believe, we are in the most precarious position we have ever been. You know, in World War II, We had Nazi Germany on one side. We had Imperial Japan on the other side. It was a tremendous threat, but we had the same shared values, family, home, God, country, freedom. We could endure it. We could fight it. But now, as you well know, James, that there is an internal rot that we have never had in America. People don't even know the difference between up and down. They don't know the difference between male and female. Girls 14 years of age say, I think I'm a boy, you know, kind of thing. I think we're in a dangerous, dangerous position.
And that internal rot can be summed up in two words, cultural Marxism. Because one of the three technologies, I mentioned the first two, critical theory, cultural pessimism, is androgyny, which is turning men into women and women into men, confusing the sexes, getting men and women fighting each other, stirring up everything, all to destroy the middle class, the family unit, which is the basic building block of the middle class, and the middle class is the engine of a capitalist society.
Well, you've made it very clear, and thank you so much. We're going to have you back on our next broadcast. I'm really excited about that. And Matthew, our announcer, will come to the mic and give our listening audience all the information that you need to get your own copy of Unsustainable.
Thank you, Pastor Larry. Our special offer today is the fantastic DVD titled Unsustainable, the UN's Agenda for World Domination. You can have a copy for a gift of $22 if you live in the United States and $35 if you live in Canada. To place your order, just call our toll-free number 1-800-652-1144. And you can order anytime online on our website at swrc.com. A great companion to this DVD is the classic favorite by Dennis Cuddy titled Conspiracy. You can have a copy for a gift of $15. Better yet, get both the DVD Unsustainable and the book Conspiracy for a gift of $27. The number to call is 1-800-652-1144. The address to write is Post Office Box 76834, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma 73147. And the website is swrc.com. Here again is Pastor Larry.
Abortion activists were livid that the Supreme Court protected the Little Sisters of the Poor from having to fund abortions. But Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden has some words of reassurance for them. He promises that if elected, he will force the Catholic nuns to fund abortions, and we'll call him Big Joe the Forcer.
The Supreme Court issued a ruling recently upholding a pro-life order from President Donald Trump that protected the Little Sisters of the Poor from being forced to pay for abortion-causing drugs under the health insurance plan. Abortion advocates have spent years trying to force the Catholic nuns to fund the destruction of unborn babies and abortions.
In comments after the ruling, Biden said he was not happy with the decision and said if elected, he would overturn President Trump's rule protecting the Catholic nuns and Christians in America who don't want their tax dollars to pay for killing babies. Biden said, and I quote him, "As disappointing as the Supreme Court's ruling is, there is a clear path to fixing it, electing a new president who will end Donald Trump's ceaseless attempts to gut every aspect of the Affordable Care Act. If I'm elected, I will restore the Obama-Biden policy that existed before the Hobby Lobby ruling." Close quotes.
Democrats are trying to force Americans to fund both abortions directly by ditching the Hyde Amendment, as well as forcing them to fund the Planned Parenthood abortion business, which takes the lives of over 330,000 babies every single year.
At last, someone is telling the truth about the transgender craze. An editorial by Maria Keffler in the Federalist.com July 10th wrote, "Transgenderism has been called the medical scandal of our time. facilitated by contemporary culture's willingness to turn a blind eye to the mutilated bodies and psychological devastation in transgender activism's wake, this social and political movement is sweeping through our nation's schools with catastrophic consequences for children, families, and society. Abigail Schreier's latest book, Irreversible Damage, The Transgender Craze Seducing Our Daughters, reveals the history, circumstances, and repercussions of an ideology that has targeted adolescent and teen girls, evidenced by a 4,000% increase in child referrals to gender clinics in the last 10 years, most of whom are females. Schreier, a parent and Ivy League-educated attorney and journalist who writes for The Wall Street Journal, digs deeply, interviews doctors, researchers, teachers, therapists, transgender-identified adults, and transgender-identified children and their parents. She parses out in shocking clarity how social media influencers, school administrators, medical and mental health practitioners, and calculated activism have created and propagated a social contagion that preys upon young girls as they navigate the struggles common to all females as they come of age. At the time girls' bodies and minds are transforming from those of children to those of adult women, the transgender ideology capitalizes on these girls' search for identity and meaning by affirming their deepest fear. You are not acceptable the way you are. The book discovers that teens and tweens today are everywhere pressed to locate themselves on a gender spectrum and within a sexuality taxonomy long before they've finished the sexual development that would otherwise guide discovery of who they are, with so much gender identity and sexual orientation education delivered with the tireless passion of priests. Keffler writes, schools and activities have turned their weaponry against the family. The bullies, according to them, are no longer society or other students. By transgenderism's twisted and sadistic logic, parents are now deceitfully vilified as their own children's worst oppressors. That is evil. Indeed, a third-wave feminism's manifesto on the abolition of the family as a requisite for female liberation serves as a catalyzing force behind the transgender phenomenon. Schreier catalogs schools' disrespect for parents as evidenced by policies that not only allow but require school personnel to withhold from parents information about their child's sexuality and gender. She further records a fifth-grade teacher's not uncommon position that parental rights ended when their children were enrolled in public school. The gatekeepers we trusted to safeguard our children have not only failed, they have turned their teeth and claws on our kids as well as on us. We can no longer afford to be blissfully ignorant of what's happening to our children. End of quote from the editorial. The central premise of the book is transgender experimentation on our daughters is something truly awful, and unless we put a stop to it, we are all guilty of participation in it. Do you need any more information to convince you that the government-controlled schools have been overrun by those who hate us who hold to biblical belief? Our Lord Jesus said in Luke 17, 1 and 2, "It is impossible but that offenses will come. But woe unto him through whom they come! It were better for him that a millstone were hanged about his neck and he cast into the sea than that he should offend one of these little ones." One has to wonder how many custom-made millstones are waiting in the warehouse down by the seashore. A few years ago, a new character in fiction novels burst on the scene. Since the debut of Harry Potter, J.K. Rowling is a familiar name. While it might be safe to assume many in the SWRC listening audience might not have read Harry Potter novels, it does not harm us to be aware of Rowling's current ruckus with feminists. The article found in PowerhouseNews.com July 6 states, childhood gender transitioning is a very heated social issue. Some people are all for it, while others have sounded the alarm about children making a decision as permanent as gender transition surgery. Often, proponents of childhood gender transitioning claim that those with concerns or reservations about this are hateful. Backers of gender transition surgery for children also tend to point to anecdotal cases where such transitions yielded positive results and happy outcomes. This debate has yet again resurfaced in early July. Harry Potter novelist J.K. Rowling posted a series of tweets articulating her concerns about childhood transgenderism as reported by Breitbart News. This subsequently prompted multiple activists of transgenderism to attack Rowling, while other individuals came to her defense. Rowling wrote that children and other young people who are gay or believe themselves to be transgender should not be shunted toward gender transition surgery. She also pointed out that several health experts have concerns regarding the pressure that some young people face to accept transgender-based surgery. Rowling also warned that pushing children into gender transition surgery has lifelong impacts that typically cannot be undone. Some examples of such impacts include the inability to have children and the potential loss of sexual capabilities. In later tweets, the author pointed out that activists of transgenderism tend to deny the harmful impacts of antidepressants that were wrongly prescribed to young people in the past. Some of the harmful impacts included, but were certainly not limited to, depression and other forms of emotional distress. End of the article. If Rowling had mentioned the much higher level of suicide amongst transgenders, she surely would have started a war. From a biblical standpoint, there is absolutely no justification for sex change, transgenderism, or homosexuality. The worn-out adage is that God didn't create Adam and Steve. Most of those who are unsatisfied with their birth sex seem to have not had a home with a good mother and father relationship that affirmed the child as one loved and nurtured. The Apostle Paul was not dealing with sexual issues, but his words in Philippians 4:11 are still worth remembering when he said, "For I have learned in whatsoever state I am, therewith to be content."
Thank you, gentlemen. Another great program. If you missed part of this exciting program, or if you want to hear it again, just go to our website at swrc.com. You'll find it under the Listen tab. If you'd like to order our special offer today, you can do that on our website as well. It is swrc.com. And you can always call us with a prayer request or question or a comment. The number is 1-800-652-1144. Thank you for tuning in today. Tune in tomorrow when Pastor Larry and James Yeager conclude this series on the Watchman on the Wall program from Southwest Radio Church.